Today we're going to talk about Yosef. I know this doesn't come as a big surprise because every week we talk about Yosef, but somehow this week it seems appropriate. And what we're going to try to do is to get a little bit into Yosef's mind. I don't know how easy that sounds, but I don't want to give so much more introductions. I just would like to begin. In the beginning of Miketz, we find Yosef in prison. We find Paro dreaming dreams. And the first thing that we have to realize or pause is the observation, or not just observation, there's a theme that has been going from the moment we met Yosef. From the very, very beginning, Yosef is always about dreams. Yosef is about dreams. Yosef dreams. Yosef interprets dreams. Yosef hears dreams. And it may actually be stronger than that. So I'm saying that's the first thing that we need to Yosef. So it means that any of us, even if we've never heard the story before, we never read any of this before, and as soon as we hear that Paro is having a dream, so that's it. We know that there's somehow a hand of God in all this, and we know that Yosef is somehow going to be brought back inside into this story. So I'm saying all this is simple, and all this is obvious. But I want to say something about Yosef. It also should not need to be sourced. It should not need to be to go looking for commentaries who say it. I want to say it, and then maybe I'll read from something from Rabbi Soloveitchik, who I think articulated it very, very clearly. Yosef is somebody who lives in the future. When I say that he lives in the future, Yosef has this, I'm afraid to use the word unique, but maybe it's relatively unique. Yosef has this ability of seeing things in the present and understanding how it's going to play out into the future. See, that's something that we see. And of course, that's part of the dream analysis. Now, one of the best articulations of this is in a book which is called The Rav Speaks. So you have it over here. All of you who long ago have decided to abandon any kind of hope of ever reading anything from Rabbi Soloveitchik, so then this is the book that you should read. These are his Zionist speeches. And I'm just jumping in the middle, page 27, literally in the middle of an essay. What in truth had disturbed Yosef's peace of mind? Skipping a little bit. What foreboding troubled him? The answer is an obscure feeling of insecurity frightened him. What were the elements of this insecurity? He saw himself and his brothers in an alien environment, far from the land of Canaan, in new circumstances and the new conditions of life. In his dream he saw, behold, we're binding sheaves. We're no longer in Canaan, we're in the land of Egypt, and can no longer be shepherds. We're integrated into new economy, with new styles of living characteristics and laws. We can no longer support ourselves by pasturing sheep. The sons of Yaakov had to learn new occupations, such as farming, building, stone cutting, woodwork, and I'm going dot, dot, dot. The brothers did not understand him, and this is the important line, for they looked upon the future as a continuation of the present. Okay, just pause right there. That's it. That's the whole story. Some people see the future through the present, and the present is actually a sustaining of the past. So whatever has happened in the past is continuing in the present, and that continues into the future, and that's as far as your imagination takes you. Well, Yosef sees the future, and he sees things very differently. By the way, notice where Rabbi Soloveitchik got all of this from. Again, I think it's really interesting. He got all of this from one point, and that was that Yosef dreamed that their sheaves would bow down to his sheaves, but these people were shepherd. And Yosef is thinking about sheaves. Sheaves is an occupation of farmers. That a shift had just now taken place in terms of economy, in terms of vocation, in terms of occupation, which means that Yosef sees things through the future, while the brother sees things through the past. That is the key to understanding everything we're going to talk about today in terms of Yosef, and how Yosef is therefore so sensitive and so aware of things which will be taking place in the future. And therefore, every time he has a dream, he's dreaming about what's going to happen in the future. And his dreams are completely different. It will explain literally every single element of the story, but I just want to do some of them. The second thing I want to say about Yosef is, as a dream interpreter, Yosef is our first, I'm not sure if I want to call him a Freudian, but he deals in a world of symbols. And those around him may not appreciate nor understand the symbols, but that doesn't stop Yosef from operating in symbols. Yosef understands symbols. He responds to them, he interprets them, he lives by them, he communicates with them. even though those around him may not necessarily understand everything that he's trying to say or everything he's trying to accomplish, nonetheless, that's really the issue. It's Yosef's understanding of the future and Yosef's use of symbols as he makes his interpretations and understandings. Okay, so with that, we can begin. One more thing. His brothers hated him for this, because Yosef's a revolutionary. They see him as being dangerous. He sees a whole different world. Whether they think his dreams are real or just his imagination is not clear. But with Yosef, there's always going to be this combination of fear, of jealousy. Some people will see his great capability. Some people will see his great capability and be afraid of it. People are scared of him. People are attracted to him. Yosef is a fascinating personality who seems to have some type of charisma, although if I sense Yosef properly, I don't think he had anyone who was very, very close with him, other than perhaps one person, and that was somebody else who knew how to dream, and that was his father. His father, we forget sometimes, is also a dreamer. His father also sees things, sees the ladder, and he dreams. He has dreams. Yosef's dreams are, in a sense, extension of his father, and his father loves him, and his father loves him for his dreams as well, even though he questions him sometimes. But Aviv Shamarta Davar, you understand, he's waiting. When is this going to happen? The dreams are going to come true. And that's something which Yosef knows, and maybe is something which his father strongly suspects, but it's something that his brothers can't possibly accept, but he scares them. See, if he didn't scare them, so what do you do to somebody who just lives off in, you know, Don Quixote? So what do? You ridicule him. You ignore them. You ridicule them. You don't take them seriously. So why in the world do the brothers feel so threatened by him? And when they do, they say, let's kill him and let's see what's going to happen with his dreams. His dreams scare them. Yosef is somebody who instills fear within people. And the thing is, because they see his power, but whether they, to the extent they recognize it or able to articulate it, that's a whole other question. And now let's begin. In the beginning of this week's parsha, Paro has dreams. Whether he has two dreams or one dream, pay very careful attention to the language of the parsha when you look at it, and that may be the difference between Paro versus those trying to interpret it, whether in fact it's one dream or two. And then somebody speaks up. Vedeber Sar HaMashkim et Paro Lemor. Sar HaMashkim speaks and he says, Et Chatai Ani Mazkir Hayom. How would you translate that? Et Chatai? My sins, plural. Plural. So what are his sins? Because apparently he did something wrong, which is why he got thrown into prison. But why is he speaking in plural? So if you look at the Bechor Shor number 2, Et Chatai Ani Mazkir, I got the king mad at me. That young man who begged me to remember him, and I forgot him. He goes, I do nonetheless have fear that Yosef will nonetheless be successful. Now this is so interesting, because he knows deep inside that Yosef will be successful. I'll explain more as we continue. He knows Yosef's going to be successful. And if Yosef's going to be successful, suddenly Yosef, this person who he's going to insult along the way, is going to become a very powerful person, but he has no question about this. I'm going to say it again. He knows his power, and he's scared of him. But nonetheless, he apparently is more scared that Paro is going to hear about this person sooner or later from somebody, maybe the Sar HaTabachim himself, and at that point he's going to come back to the Sar HaMashkim, hold it, you were there, didn't you know him? Did you know about this capability? Which means that in a certain sense, by now talking to Paro, he is defending himself and protecting himself, because otherwise he may very well be killed soon. The Sar HaTabachim, the one who owns the prison, can still tell. Yeah, he's still around, which means the information can still get there. And that's exactly what the Bechor Shor seems to be identifying. Again, it's this dual issue, this power of Yosef and this fear of Yosef. The Chizkuni, same school of thought, the large Balei HaTosfot school. Et chata'ai, ma shesarachti al paro, ma sheshachachti al Yosef. My sins I'm mentioning now, the way I treated Yosef and what I did to the king. And by the way, do you realize this is incredible chutzpah to talk this way to the king? it's almost equality. Again, he doesn't explain himself, but it's equality. What I did to the king, and the king would obviously take that as a very serious offense, and what I did to Yosef. But in his mind, he can't help himself, because we're going to say it again. We're going to deal with words today, we're going to deal with symbols, we're going to try to understand what people are saying, and what people are saying, even when they're not saying it clearly. And here is our first example today. He continues and he says something else, and let's go back to the text itself. Paro katzaf ala vadav yitein oti bamishmar, beit sar hatabachim otiv et sar haofim. I and the baker were both put into prison. V'nachalma chalom b'layla echad. Now, how do you translate that? V'nachalma chalom b'layla echad anivahu. We dreamed a dream that night. So the question over here, did they both have the same dream, or do they have different dreams? At this point, how is it presented? V'nachalma chalom b'layla echad. And I'm going to say this again. The dreams from the very beginning are going to have come in twos. Yaakov has two dreams. Yosef has two dreams. There are two dreams of the two Sarim. Paro has two dreams. They come in two, but there's constantly going to be a tension all the way through. Are these the same dreams or are these different dreams? Does Yosef have the same dream? Did Yaakov have the same dreams? Does Yaakov have the same dreams in both? And you say, no, those are very different dreams. Are they related at all? Are these two Sarim, do they have the same dream? Does Paro have the same dream? Constant question is going to be asked, and it doesn't mean that you need to have the same answer to every single question, but we will notice it's in two. And as it's presented right now, he says, V'nachalma chalom b'layla chad. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean it really was one dream, or does that mean that's his current perception? It means it's his current perception. Ish kapitron chalomo chalamnu. And then he adds, but each dream could be based on its interpretation. He's telling us something which is very scary, and I'm not sure if you understand it yet. He is claiming we both objectively had the same dream, and he's claiming, but then subjectively, somebody interpreted them, and the one who interpreted them then determined, the person who interpreted it determined what exactly was going to take place. V'sham itanu nar ivri eved l'sar ha-tabachim v'nisaper lo v'yiftar lanu et chalom moteinu. His interpretation is what made them into two different dreams. Ish kechalamo patar, v'yik asher patar lanu ken haya. And as he interpreted, that's what happened. Oti heshiv al kani, v'oto tala. He returned me to my position, and he had the other fellow killed. Do you realize what he's saying? He's claiming it's Yosef who decided that this particular person would live, and it's Yosef who decided that this particular person will die. By the way, Rashi doesn't like that at all, what I just now said. Rashi tries to move away from this, but before we get to Rashi, look at the Targum in source number 4. V'hava hecha depashar lanu kedin havayati otiv bimilei. He returned me with his words. V'yi kamo shepatar lanu kachaya oti heshiv bidvarav. Yosef had the ability, and he's the one who returned me to my job. Rashi doesn't like this. Heshiv al kani paro. Haneskir lamala. It must be Paro who was mentioned before. And if you read the text again, you'll realize that Rashi's interpretation is not all that simple, and his read, it's not fluid. On the other hand, the Ibn Ezra, oti heshiv paro. V'yesh om shu bidibur. Some say it's actually the words. We'll see who the Yesh Omer are in a moment. The Malbim, the Emek Dover in 8 and 9. Hu heshiv oti al kani lo ata. He's saying to Paro, he's the one who gave me my job back, not you. By the way, you talk about chutzpah. You talk about chutzpah, and what's the problem here? If this is true, if this is what he said, and if this is what it means, do you realize what this is really telling us? He's more afraid of Yosef than he is of Paro. That's a mouthful. That's absolutely astounding that you could be standing in front of the most powerful man, maybe in the world, certainly in this part of the world, certainly in this country, and say to him, yeah, you're just a puppet. Somebody else decided how you're going to behave. The Emek Davar, the Netziv, Oti Yoshiv, HaPoter, the one who interpreted it, he's the one who decided. Shekach Yiskulat Nafsho, Shachalom Aleich Achar Pitrono, because the dreams go according to those who interpret it. By the way, what's interesting is that all of these interpretations, the second one of the Ibn Ezra, the Malbim, the Emek Davar, all of them are based on the Gemara in source number 10, which is interesting how Rashi moved away from the Gemara over here. The Gemara over here says, but it says, you look three lines in the bottom in source 10, Kolach chalomo tochim acharapeh, atu kolach mo tochim acharapeh, krahu. Don't say that, you know, it said the way it was quoted is a shenemar, because as it says, where does it say this? Where, is there a pasuk that says that all dreams go after the interpretation? So the Gemara says, yeah. Going back to Yosef. The Gemara uses this as the interpretation, that of course, Yosef was the one who gave the wine steward his job back, and Yosef is the one who had the baker killed, which of course is very interesting to me, because I'm not saying that this is true, but I'm willing to say it's true. But if it is true, a question that we all should be asking ourselves is why? Why did Yosef, again, if they both had the same dream, and you can argue at that point, you can say, no, I studied it in depth, and I think there's little nuances between the two, I can have reason to say that this dream meant this, and this dream meant this, but notice how he presented it. He presented it as that we both had the same dream. We both had the same dream in the same night, and Yosef is the one who decided that I'm going to have my job back, and I'm going to live, and Yosef's the one who decided that he's going to die. So just using this, and the Gemara seems to adopt this. So now you realize the Sar HaMashkim goes against Rashi, but he does go with the Gemara in Brachot. So if this is what the Gemara says, and therefore this seems to be a valid approach to take, we're just still left with one question. Why in the world does Yosef determine that this person lives and this person dies? Keep that in mind and let us continue. When we go back to the very beginning, there's a second question that I want to raise, and I'll say it and then we'll look inside and we'll answer it. Why is Yosef in prison? Well, Yosef is in prison because of a certain event which either happened or didn't happen or almost happened, and that is one of our favorite characters, and Mrs. Potiphar, right? And here's to you, Mrs. Potiphar, right? So, Mrs. Potiphar accuses Yosef of rape or attempted rape. So let's go back a second and read the beginning of source number 11. V'Yosef hurad Mitzrayma. Yosef was taken down to Egypt. V'Kineo Potiphar sris Paro, and Potiphar, who is one of Paro's ministers, sar hatabachim. Now, we get fooled sometimes because we have our wine steward and we have our baker. So over here we have the butcher and we got the candlestick maker and we got all these people. But that's not what the Sar HaTabachim means. The first hint that you should know that it's not what it means is a little later on when we find out that Yosef was thrown into the prison of the Sar HaTabachim. Now, why in the world would Sar HaTabachim have a prison? So the answer is, the answer is that Sar HaTabachim doesn't mean what you think it means. The word Tabachim means the butcher. So he is the butcher of Egypt. He is the chief executioner in Egypt. If you're not clear about that, look at source number 12, the Targum on that pasuk. V'Yosef itchat l'Mitzrayim. Yosef arrives in Egypt. Uzvane Potiphar Rabba de Paro, and Potiphar, one of the ministers of Paro, Rav Kotalaya, the chief executioner. So by the way, did that just make everything a little bit scarier? That means that Yosef was bought by the chief executioner, and now I want to ask my question again. Starting with other wives is okay from what we heard over here, but if you're going to start with somebody, Don't start with the wife of the chief executioner. By the way, it's more complicated than that, because what happens when the wife of the chief executioner starts with you? Okay, so, right, this is a problem. This is a problem any way you look at this. But my question is very simple, and all of us now have to ask it. Why doesn't the executioner execute? Because that's what executioners do. By the way, can I tell you a secret? In ancient Egypt, and in many regimes till this very day, you don't need a lot of evidence to kill somebody. And therefore, this man, as the chief executioner, is very experienced. He's a professional. He knows how to do it very, very quickly, and he knows how to do it very, very slowly. He knows what Mrs. Potiphar is like, and he's made that bed. And he chooses to keep her. And by the way, I just realized he can easily kill her as well. My point is that I'm not saying that there's no answers to this, because there has to be an answer. I'm just saying is that everything got a little bit more complicated when we understand the true identity of Yosef's boss And the identity is that he is the chief executioner, and therefore the fact that when his wife screams rape, again, you're right. Maybe he doesn't trust her, maybe he doesn't believe her. But he has one of two choices that I would think. Either stay with Yosef, which would be quite surprising, and we'll see why we could perhaps build a case for that, or stay with his wife. If he stays with his wife, so then Yosef should be gotten rid of. I'm just saying the logic over here, just knowing all the pieces of information so far, because we're missing pieces of information. But based on the information that we're utilizing right now, he's the chief executioner, his wife screams rape, he should be taken out, and you can now, the only decision you can make now is he gets killed very, very quickly or very, very slowly. And I would assume that he would get killed very slowly. Okay, you want to kill him quickly? Fine, kill him. No, I think it would kill him slowly. The Yosef Urad Mitzrayim, the Akneu Potiphar, Susro, Sarah Tabachim, Ish Mitzrayim, Yadish Milim, and so on and so forth, Pasuk Bet. And this is the other consideration. We're in source number 11, and this, and now we're going to hear what the other considerations are. Vayihi Hashem et Yosef, vayihi Ish Matzliach. That Yosef, God is with him. By the way, that's another thing about Yosef all the way through. God is with him, and he is successful. And this happens in the house of this Egyptian. Vayar Adonav ki Hashem ito. By the way, that is absolutely amazing. Here we have our polytheistic Egyptian who knows that God is with Yosef. He also knows that Yosef absolutely has the golden touch, the Midas touch. Everything he touches turns to gold, and Yosef is unbelievably successful. And Yosef finds favor in this man's eyes, and he serves him. And being that everything that Yosef touches turns to gold, he puts in charge of everything. And from the moment he puts Yosef in charge of everything, on everything that he has, God blesses the home of this Egyptian, Beglal Yosef, because of Yosef. Vayihi birkat Hashem bekol asher yesh lo b'vayit v'sadeh. In every single thing that this man owns, everything has become successful, and for one reason. And what is that reason? Yosef. Vayazov kol asher lo, and therefore he puts everything in this man's hands, in Yosef's hands, biyad Yosef, v'lo yataimu imo ma'umah. Everything. Ki im halechem asher hu ochel. The only thing that he withholds is the bread that he eats. Now, keep in mind that pasuk, because that's a very important pasuk. By the way, also keep in mind one other point, and that is bread. And then we're told one more thing, one more little piece of information in terms of our character development, and that is, v'hi Yosef yifei Torah v'yifei mar'eh, and Yosef is hot. Okay, it is certainly interesting that, and unusual, that we're told about a character's looks this far into the story. That's unusual. Normally we're told about somebody's looks much earlier, after they're introduced. Over here it's much, much later. Anyway, what we have over here is, I skipped all the exciting part because I know some of you, it's a little much. So we skipped much of the seduction, so I apologize. I know a lot of you will be going home and reading this now, especially because they skipped it when you went to school. Okay, but she says sleep with me, and he says no. So let me read that. So she hits on him, and what is his response? I'm reading what you don't have in front of me. She casts her lustful eye on Yosef, Atomer, and she says, Shichva imi, lie with me. Vayima'in, and he absolutely refuses, despite the trap. Vayomer leishet Adonav, and he says to his master's wife, Hein Adoni lo yodai iti ma babayit. My master doesn't even pay attention to anything going on in the house. V'kol sheyesh lo tan biyadi. He's given me absolute trust. So over here, Yosef is speaking in terms of morals. This man trusts me completely. There's nobody who has more authority in this house than me. And there's nothing that he's withheld from me. Now, by the way, when it said it a moment ago, what was it called? Except for the bread that he eats. Over here, when Yosef says it over, he says, Ki im otach, other than you, ba'asher at ishto, because you're his wife. And how can I do something which is so wrong? And then he adds in one more consideration, V'chatati la... le'elokin, and then I would be sinning to God or against God. Which is interesting because Yosef gives a very rich response. His response is that this would be wrong in terms of my master, and this would be wrong in terms of my master. This would be wrong in terms of the trust that has been given me, and I don't behave like that. And he's entrusted me with everything, but again, this is interesting, because the bread just became the wife. But keep that in mind, because again, that's very important. And this would be morally wrong, because this would be against the will of God. So let's pause here for a second, because I now want to suggest something which maybe is not that obvious to you. Let me go back first to the question that we had. What's the question? She comes out, she grabs his clothing, right? That's back where you have in Yud Aleph. V'yika yom hazev, v'yavo abayti lasot melachto, v'ish ein... Ve'in ish me'anshei abayit shem abayit. There's no one there. Vatifseu bivigdo. She grabs his clothing. Le'mor. She says, shechvai mi. Ve'yazov bigdo biyada. Ve'yanas ve'yatzei achutza. So she grabs his clothing. He lets it slip off of him and he runs outside. And then she has a problem. Ve'yihi kirot ki yazov bigdo biyada. And she's standing there by herself in the room looking, and she's got his clothing in her hands. She now needs to create a narrative to explain what in the world just now happened. And she says as follows again. He ran away. She starts calling people. Look at this. They brought this Jew in order to... Letzachek could be interesting because it sometimes does have sexual connotations. He came to have relations with me. And of course, no one was there, so there's no one there to disprove her narrative. And she says, and I screamed as loud as I could. And when he heard me screaming, he left his clothing by me. By the way, notice how she shifted a little bit. Instead of in her hands, etzli. It's important when you lie to make sure that you say it in a way that doesn't look as incriminating. Without reading everything else, she tells it to her husband. Adbo Adonav El Beito, that was the end of Tedzayin, Pasuk Yudzayin, with the very love from Eila Lemor, she told him these things, saying, Boy la evid ivri asher heveta lanu. Notice she just now blamed him. You're the one who brought this guy into the house. And look what he did to me. Let's achek be. Vihi karimi koli ve'kran, I screamed. And what happened when I screamed? Ve'ezov bigdo etzli. He left his clothing by me. Now, by the way, do you understand her story, what she's saying? She's saying Yosef sort of walked into the room, slammed the door closed, threw it down on the bed, and then started deliberately taking off his clothes. Right? Which calm, collected, and so on. And then she screams, so then he runs out and he forgets his clothing. That's what she just now said happened. So as she tells this story, your servant, look what he did to me. He got very upset. Now right there is where our question comes back, so he should have killed him. He puts him in prison. By the way, not just in prison. He puts him with the political prisoners. He puts him with the people who are really dangerous. It's not that he puts him together with the murderers or the rapists or the thieves. He puts him in a particular prison, and that's interesting. And he's there in this prison. Now the same thing happens again. Yosef again finds favor in the person in charge of the prison. And the person in the prison now puts everything in Yosef's hands. He puts him in charge of everything. And once again, Yosef is in charge. Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Ein sar beit asor et kol muma biyado. He puts everything in his hands. Vasher Hashem ito, because he sees that God is with him. Vasher waser Hashem atzliach. And whenever he does, is successful. Which means everybody, Yosef has this power. People see it. But there's another point. Let's say it clearly now. So why didn't he kill him? He's terrified. He's absolutely terrified. Do I need to spell this out, why he's terrified? Because from the day that Yosef got there, he became successful. From the day that Yosef got there, he became very, very wealthy. If he gets rid of Yosef, all of his wealth can disappear in half a second. Not only can all of his wealth disappear, this man is an executioner. He understands leverage, he understands pain. He understands how to give pain. And he is absolutely terrified that he will get a lot of pain very, very slowly from God if he does anything to Yosef. He can't do anything to him. Which, once again, we understand Yosef is somebody who's unbelievably scary, frightening, because he has this power. They see the power. And this therefore, makes Yosef somebody. Where do you put Yosef? You put him in the political prison. And what happens in the political prison? Once again, he rises completely to the top. Quickly, just a couple of interesting comments on this. Look at the Midrash in source number 15. He puts him in prison. Valo ben mavetu. But he should be put to death. Im emetu adavar, if it's true. So now the various commentaries are going to play with the different combinations that he doesn't really trust his wife, which then creates all different questions. He doesn't really believe the story. And finally, he's really scared of Yosef. The Ramban in 17 writes, Viziperakatuv Shesamu Sham Yosef Meavato Dunavoto, that he actually liked him. He actually liked him and didn't want to kill him. In 18, I have two commentaries there, both from the Balei HaTosfot, Chaim Paltiel and the Chizkuni. They both go along the same lines. We'll read the Chizkuni because it's a little more developed, but what's fascinating about them is, and I find this actually amazing, here are people who lived either during or a little bit after the Crusades. Jews never got a fair trial. And nonetheless, the way they're ready to read the text is that law has certain rules to it. And there's no witnesses over here. How can Yosef actually be punished without witnesses, without a fair trial, without due process? Nobody read his Miranda. And they have this real sense of justice, which is fascinating, considering where they live and what happens when you have interaction with those who are simply more powerful and don't have the same belief system in it. Look at 18. We'll do it quickly. The Rav Chaim Paltiel, V'yikach Adonai Yosef Beit HaSohar. Right, he took him. Tema, lama lo haragoto. It's shocking. Why didn't he kill him? V'lo yu mitzuvim al arayot. Even non-Jews have a sensibility in terms of illicit sexual relations. V'yesh lomar sheviu ledin v'ru sheyek kora la'acharav. Now let me explain this a little bit better. Look at the Chizkuni. Put him in prison. Lo haya ben mavet. Shouldn't have he been executed? Ki lo hayu edim bedavar. Oh, there were no witnesses. I love that. They go, oh, there's no witnesses. Okay, therefore, okay, so let's let the Jew off because there's no witnesses over here. Yeah, who cares that it was his wife? Okay, we'll let him off on this. There's no credible witnesses over here. Rak lenichu b'mishbar. And that's why they only put him in holding. V'nimtza ba'agada. And now he quotes a midrash. Shevi Yosef lefnei melech. That they brought him in front of the king himself. Ba Gavriel kidmut ish. And then Gavriel showed up. Gavriel, a malach, shows up and says, and looking like a person, V'amar im al ha-melech tov yitzaveh livdok bevigdehem. He says, hold it. Can we investigate this a little bit more? She claimed rape. So let's look at both of their clothing. Im bigdeha isha nikra'im, if her clothing was ripped, biyadua shechzik ba Yosef l'ansa, then we know that Yosef grabbed her and tried to rape her. V'im bigdeha Yosef nikra'im, but if Yosef's clothing was ripped, hechzika hi l'ansa. V'yavakesha davar, and they looked at it. And they saw Yosef's clothing is ripped, which, by the way, is also a theme of Yosef having clothing ripped off of him. This is not the only time, it's not the first time. And that's the reason he got off, because Yosef got a fair trial. But by the way, I'll just say it again, that this is absolutely amazing that we can imagine such a thing existed then. Yeah. Yes, yes, hold on a second. You don't have to ask anything today, just everything is here. In just to continue the line in the Chizkuni, Mikomakom lo niftar miyad kidei shelo levayesh eshet Potifar. He didn't want to embarrass her, which, by the way, is actually embarrassing himself, and therefore he had to do something. If you look at 19 in the Alshech towards the end of the last two lines, Alkein hivshira devavinu beit hasor v'gam ze biyirat Elokim penya anash. He was afraid he would suffer if he did anything really bad to Yosef. He can't kill him. Rav Hirsch in source number 20, Potifar. Potifar, the chief executioner, was also ultimately the one in charge of the prison. Who revered Yosef el Beit Hasohar, Lemanya vi Sham Toelet. Exactly what you said. He just moved his job over and put him over there. Kaderech Sha'adko, he vi Veto. Just like previously put in front of his house, now he puts him in front of his prison. And deep inside, he really knew that Yosef was innocent. The Malbim and the Meshechachma go along the same lines, and they say very clearly that he's in charge of the prison, and that's why they put him in the prison, because he wants the blessing of Yosef still to continue. So essentially, according to this, Yosef is still his slave, but instead of being in charge of his house, now he became in charge of his prison. There are midrashim like that as well. Rashi quotes it also. Rashi quotes it and says that Potiphar bought Yosef himself because he was very good looking, and that was his interest in Yosef, and that's part of the reason that Eshet Potiphar was so lonely. Okay, so there is a whole subtext over there. Let's continue. Let's keep this. Let's keep this clean. Otherwise, we have to check everyone's pacemakers afterwards. Okay. Okay. Continue. So now I want to go back to the question that I raised before that we still haven't answered, and that question is, okay. So we know why Potiphar doesn't kill him because he's terrified, but I still had another question, and that question was: when Yosef hears the two dreams, why does Yosef, the two dreams of the Sar Hamashkim and the Sar Hofot, why does Yosef determine that this one will live and this one will die? And I don't know if you like that question, but the two dreams sound pretty similar. What gave him either the insight that he understood that's what's going to happen, or even worse, what gave him the insight to make that decision? So I'll just point out as follows, that one of these people is the baker. And the baker is somebody who bakes bread. And the person who bakes bread, Yosef looks at him and says, bread is bad. Bread is something ominous. Now, I want to say something else, which never made any sense before. Okay, now it will make sense. Are you ready for this? I didn't hear a yes.
Yes.
Yes. The story of Yosef going down to Egypt is the story of the beginning of the slavery in Egypt, which will end with the story of Passover when we leave Egypt. This is the beginning, that is the end of the story. The very beginning of the story takes place when Yosef is thrown into the pit. Right then there are possibilities as far as what will happen to him. Again, the brothers are frightened of him. The brothers, what's going to be the dreams? The brothers are ready to kill him. But when we read the verse over there, it says as follows: they take him, they rip the clothing off of him. By the way, now notice the thematic relationship. They rip his clothing off of him and they throw him into a bor. By the way, later on in the narrative, the prison in Egypt will be called a bor as well. Clothing being ripped off, ending up in prison. And by the way, can you imagine, Yosef? I've seen this movie before. It never works out well with me. Like, and there's something really there's something unbelievably tragic about Yosef. God is always with him, and he always sees God's hand, and he knows what's going to happen, and he never gives up faith, and really bad things keep happening to him. But again, this entire combination is what's really interesting. Anyway, they take him and they throw him into the pit, and it says, this is Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Kaf Hei, V'yeshvu le'echol lechem, and they sit down to eat bread, which means the brothers are sitting and eating bread, as the whole thing is about to come out, but it's bread specifically. If we go on, and now we recall the funny turn in language, when Potiphar's everything that he has is given to Yosef except the bread that he eats. And then Yosef says to the wife, everything is here except for the bread. Now, you know what's interesting is that we have like this strange thing about Pesach. We say, oh, we're allowed to eat, we're allowed to eat matzah, we can't eat chametz, and what's the difference between the two? And that one has, it rises, the yeast, and it rises, and so on. But it's more than that. The Gemara says that chametz is representative of the Yetzer Hara. Where in the world do we find any place in the Chumash that bread is connected to the Yetzer Hara? Answer: Eshet Potiphar. How? Because Potiphar said everything is in Yosef's except for the bread that I eat. When Yosef repeats it, he applies this to Eshet Potiphar, which means that the extension of the metaphor is she is the bread, which means if she becomes the bread, that's the Yetzer Hara. She's the one who says, come and sleep with me. This is the only place that we see bread connected to Yetzer Hara, not only in the Torah itself, but specifically in the story which is leading down to the enslavement in Egypt. Now, just hold on to that for 1 second. And these two ministers are there. The guy who bakes the bread and the guy who pours the wine. And Yosef listens to the two dreams and says, you're going to die. Who's going to die? The baker's going to die. Of course the baker's going to die. Because bread is ominous. In the Yosef narrative, bread is ominous. Bread is what they're doing or eating before he gets sold. Bread is the metaphor which is being used for the Yetzer Hara, for this woman who tries to get him to sleep with her. Yosef hears there's a baker over here. No. Baker? No, this is not going to work out very well for you. Now, the wine steward, that's a little more interesting. Because wine is still going to have a purpose in this story, because there's still going to be a time to celebrate. So now we have such limited time, and I have so much to try to explain. So let me proceed a little bit and try to explain what happens next. So there's just one more thing which is really important as we go through source 25. Source 25 is the baker and is the wine steward, and they both have their dreams and so on. And what does Yosef say? He says, this is what's going to happen. And finally, he says as follows, in Source 25, Pasuk Tetvav, or Pasuk Yudalid, and this is what the man, as we started today, apologizes, and this was his sin, because he forgot Yosef. He says to him, you're going to go back, you're going to have your job, Kim zachartani itcha, kasher yitavlach, vasita imadi chesed, do me a favor, viskartani el paro, tell Paro about me. By the way, that itself is completely bizarre. What does Paro care about this guy here? Tell Paro about me. Botzitani min abayit hazeh. Get me out of this place. Ki gunav gunavti. What does that mean, gunav gunavti? Because I was kidnapped. Me'eretz ha'evrim. I was kidnapped. V'gam polo asiti muman. Here I've done nothing wrong either. Ki samu oti babor. They put me in the pit. You like the way that Yosef combines all the things together. I was kidnapped, and that's back over there. It's the two story, because it's the two stories are the same story. It's the same story. It's the clothing is ripped off, and he's thrown in a pit, and God is with him, and everybody sees God is with him, everybody's afraid of him. So what we have over here is just these series of events where people are afraid of him, and he has this power, and this finally takes us now, and now we're going to do Parshat Miketz very, very quickly. The rest of Miketz, what happens is, well, it's obvious what's going to happen. He hears Paro's dreams, he interprets Paro's dreams, and he tells him the future. He tells him what's going to happen. He tells Paro the two dreams are one dream, you're going to have good years, you're going to have bad years, and then he goes on, and we see Yosef's, again, he dreamed in terms of understanding of economics all those years before, when he was 17 years old, and he immediately interprets this dream also in terms of economics, and he creates a 14-year plan, and he says, this is what you need to do, and Yosef is going to make Paro a very wealthy man. And Paro hears it right away. Paro understands he's going to be incredibly wealthy, which means this may be a record. Because Yosef, everyone's impressed with him as soon as they see him, but this is a record because within 15 minutes, he not only has Paro believing in this, he has Paro believing in him, Paro believing that God is with him, he says that as well. Here, the Spirit of God is with this man. And Paro is probably a very intelligent man. And Paro sees right away, here's a guy that I can trust, and he just completely trusts him. He completely trusts him, gives him the ring, gives him the title, gives him everything. And now let's go back to Yosef. From the moment Yosef heard Paro's dreams, he knows that the day is coming, sooner rather than later, that his brothers will come. His brothers are going to be here. Because he knows Yosef sees the future. Actually, Yosef really knew this from the day that he had his first dream. He knew that his brothers are going to come looking for food. Their stalks will bow down to his stalks. By the way, notice the difference. Yosef dreams about stalks. Paro dreams about stalks. That's not bread. It's without the Yetzer Hara still. Only when it gets turned into bread does it rise and become the Yetzer Hara. And that's something which is negative. Yosef knows the brothers are coming. And Yosef now has, at this point, conservative, 9 years to prepare for this. 9 years to prepare for the moment that they're going to meet. And when they meet, Yosef sees them. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him. They all bow down to him. They bow down to him because they want food, which means his dream now has come true. There's only one problem. They don't know the dream has come true. Right? If the tree falls in the forest, right? Or if a husband says something and his wife doesn't hear it, is he still wrong? Right?
For sure.
So, does it count that they all bow down to him and they don't know they bow down to him? So for Yosef, is this a hollow victory? Or is... No, see, Yosef doesn't need it. Yosef always knew what's going to happen. For Yosef, it was real when he dreamed it when he was 17 years old. He doesn't have to wait till he's 39 years old. That's the time frame here. Yosef knew when he was 17 years old, they're going to come and bow down to him for food. It's happened. They don't know it. And then Yosef says to him, and we're not going to go into all the details, Yosef says, you know, you guys are spies, you're looking for something. And they say, no, we just want food. He goes, no, you're looking for something. No, we just want food. He goes, no, I think you're looking for something. He goes, no, we just want food. And then they say something, and this is some, I apologize, because it's not the first time, it won't be the last time, God willing, that I will say this, but the narrative is just so interesting in this place. He says, you're spies, we're not spies. He says, you're looking by Erva Ta'aretz. You've been looking in the red light district. You've been looking for something. Again, all they know about Yosef is that he's a good-looking boy, and he'll be sold off by a slave to somebody who's wealthy, who wants a good-looking boy, which is exactly what happened. But they never imagined that Yosef can somehow turn that, with a little stop in prison, to becoming the second most powerful man in Egypt. And he says to him, "Vayom aleim lo ervata aretz batim lerot." He goes, "No, you guys came looking for something." You know why Yosef says this? Because he wants to believe that it's true. Mm-hmm. He wants to believe that they're looking. And then they say, by the way, if you think I'm imagining this, I will bring you all into my imagination. Yosef remembers the dreams that have come true. And he says to them, "Raglim atem, lerot et ervat ha'aretz batem. You're spies and you've been looking in the red light district." We just want food. No, we're brothers and we just want food. No. You came looking in the red light district. No, we're 12 brothers. We're sons of one man, Be'eretz Canaan, from the land of Canaan. And the youngest is with his father. By the way, if you're Yosef, what is the most interesting words in this whole verse? There's three elements which are interesting. Most is interesting. We're 12 brothers is interesting. Okay, 12 brothers. That's we're brothers. We're 12 brothers. Good. His father, he listens carefully. His younger brother, what do they have to do to him? That's interesting. But then they talk about him. And what do they say? Ve'achad einenu. That's how we talk about in our family. Einenu. And what does Yosef respond to that? You ready? Vayomer leim Yosef. Yosef says, "Hu asher dibarti aleichem leimam raglim atem." That's the one I'm talking about when I said that you're spies. You're looking for him. By the way, do you hear him begging them to agree? And they can't. They say, "No, we just want food." By the way, go back to all those years before when they threw him in the pit and they're sitting there eating bread. We just want food. So Yosef then takes them and throws them all in prison, only for 3 days. 3 days is enough. Let them feel what it's like. 3 days is enough. They spend 3 days in prison. Let them stew, let them think, let them review. And then he gives them their food, and he does something which is unbelievably cynical. He puts their money back in their bag. And as they turn around and walk away, at some point, one opens the bag, and eventually they all open their bag, and they all realize that they have their money again. But they don't understand Yosef, because they never understood Yosef. They don't understand Yosef who's speaking to them in symbols. And Yosef is saying, remember, he takes one of their brothers, Shimon, and he puts them in prison, and they all turn around and walk away from leaving their brother behind. But they walk away, but they have food. We want food. We're not spies. We don't care about our brother, although we want his food. So he gives them food. But what happened the last time they turned around and walked away from their brother? They had the food, the bread on the one hand, but on the other hand, they got money for him. So Yosef cynically puts money back in their bags and said, here's some money. You left a brother behind, at least one, maybe more, but at least you have some money. And this prepares us for what happens next. What happens is that they come back the second time. They have no choice. They have to come back, and they bring Binyamin, and now they get reunited, and now there are 11 of them. And Yosef then sits them around and puts them all around the table, and they get completely shocked when they realize this. And we are moving rapidly towards 27. He sits them all around in one place, and they're all completely shocked that Yosef is able to do this. So that's Mem Gimel Lamed Gimel. What happens in the next pasuk? Sorry, he puts them all in birth order as well. And what else does he do? And what else does he do? Vayishtu vayishikru imo. Where do they get wine from? And they get drunk together with him. So there's something else going on over here. There's a couple things going on. One is that Yosef put them all in order. There's various midrashim which you can look at afterwards exactly what's going on. He puts himself next to Binyamin and they question and he says, he doesn't have a mother, I also don't have a mother. Isn't that an interesting midrash? Yeah, we should be sitting there. He's giving them hints along the way. But there's something else which happened just now. They all drank with him, which means that Yosef just now became the wine steward. Yosef is giving them wine. Yosef is drinking with them. And then that prepares us for the final scene, which is the way we're going to end the parsha, the way we're going to end today. Correct. Bread is here. Here is finally an opportunity that they are able to celebrate. This is finally an opportunity where the whole family is together. But by the way, this is very similar to when they bow down to him. Because when they bow down to him, they don't know they're bowing down to him. And now the whole family is whole. They feel very relieved. Why do they feel relieved? Because they're going to be able to bring Binyamin home. Why do they feel relieved? Because Shimon is back. So all 11 of them are together again. The family is whole. Yosef, on the other hand, has something that he never had before, or at least not for the last who knows how many years, that the whole family is sitting together and eating. This is a time of celebration. We can eat bread now, and we can drink wine now. By the way, this isn't Pesach. This is something, this is Chag Shavuot, if you will. This is some Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. This is a completely different experience where the entire family is whole, but there's one problem. They don't know it. And they're again willing to turn around and walk away, never looking for that last brother that Yosef insisted you look for. And now Yosef does something interesting. Yosef takes, because let's look at source 31. Yosef gives instructions to the person in charge of his household. Go and you're going to chase them down. Put the money back once again. Put the money back. Because you're turning around again and leaving your brother behind. But this time he also says to put the cup in. It doesn't say to this fellow, he says nothing else about the cup at this point. The morning dawns, they go and they leave. And as far as they're concerned, the story is over. Wow. You know, they can take a deep breath and they're on their way home. Go chase them down, catch up to them. And he says exactly what to say. How can you return good behavior with bad behavior? By the way, remember Yosef himself? How can I repay my master, who's put me in charge of everything, with improper behavior? For Yosef, this is important. That cup that he drinks, the cup that he uses for divination. What in the world is he talking about? The cup that he uses for divination, he catches up to them, he tells them, and they say, what are you talking about? They have no idea what he's talking about. And then when they finally catch up, and they finally meet up with Yosef, in Pasuk Tet Vav at the very end, Vayomer lam Yosef, ma maaser hazeh she'asitam, alo yadatam ki nachesh nachesh ish asher kimoni. It's no longer the cup, it's Yosef. So what in the world just now happened in this whole thing? Put the cup, say about this about the cup, say the cup is used for divination, and then Yosef denies it's used for divination. What in the world does he want from them? What is he trying to say to them? So let me just remind us all of one thing. Yosef works in a world of symbols. There are various midrashim that build this up a little bit more, that as he sits them down in the right order, he looks at his cup. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's the oldest, looks, okay, that's the next one, it's the next one. And that it's the cup. It's the cup which has the power. But can I remind you Yosef's inner world? Yosef's inner world is one. What was it that took him out of prison and gave him his job? Which means if you're Yosef and you have what do they call that insignia? Arm, coat of arms. What would Yosef's coat of arms be? So it would be the wine cup. Why would it be the wine cup? Because it was the wine cup which got him out of prison. It was the interpretation of the dream of the wine cup which took him out of prison and made him the second most powerful man in Egypt. It's the wine cup which symbolizes Yosef's powers. But not because the wine cup has the powers, it's because Yosef has the power and Yosef's able to understand the dreams. So when Yosef puts the cup in their bag and then he accuses them of stealing the cup, what is Yosef really saying to them? you kidnapped me. Because Yosef is the cup. Yosef is accusing them of kidnapping, and they're saying, we didn't steal anything. And he's saying, yeah, you did. And they're saying, but we never took this. Because they have no idea what he's talking about. And Yosef then says it to them, but it's not the cup, it's me. I'm the one who has this power. I'm the one who sees the future. I'm the one who understands how things unfold. And the brothers are just sitting there and listening to this and have no idea whatsoever what Yosef is talking about. Which means I'm going to do something terrible to you, and I'm not the one that did it. It was already the Babylonian scholars who did it long ago when they divided the Torah into the Parshiot. And this is how we end Parshat Miketz. We end Parshat Miketz with Yosef throwing at them information that they do not have the capacity to possibly understand what he's talking about, but he's already told it to them twice. He said it one time when he said, that's the one I'm talking about. You're looking for that brother. And they say, no, we're not. We just want food. We just want food. Yosef gives them food, but he also gives them money. Yosef gives them food, and he gives them money, and he gives them wine. By Yosef giving them wine, we just now went towards the end game. Because when he gives them the wine, we've just now moved towards the cup. When he puts the cup in their bag, he lets it be said to them, the cup represents Yosef's ability to see the future. You stole this. We didn't steal anything. And then Yosef says, well, it's not the cup, it's me. But who is Yosef? Yosef is the cup. Because the cup is the cup that sees the future. But it's not that the cup is used to see the future. It's the cup is what Yosef saw, which ended up changing his life dramatically. But they don't understand any of this. And as far as they're concerned, we never stole anything. But what did Yosef say? What did he say to the Sar HaMashkin? Ganov ganafti. But I was kidnapped. They stole me. They kidnapped me. They took me away from my father. The story's not over yet. We're getting very, very close. Shabbat shalom.